right. Thank you, everyone, for joining with us for the World Peace Satsang. I'm hoping you can hear me okay here. Welcome, and it's just about 5 o'clock on whatever day. This is September 3rd, 2020. It's really an honor to be with you all, and I'm getting set up here. There we go. So, great. So, basically, this is the second time we've done this, and the idea behind this is to create a space of silence and receptivity and inspiration where we can affirm the underlying truth of being, the interconnectedness of all life, and connect also with the eternal dimension of consciousness during a time where we're being constantly bombarded with the opposite of that. And I think it's very challenging to be alive right now in the United States or wherever we are. I think this is a worldwide event, this whole pandemic event. So, welcome. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and I am recording this just audio so that maybe if you have friends or if you want to listen to it later, it'll be available, hopefully. So I'd like to just go ahead and jump right in. The basic idea is we'll have a meditation time first, and then we can, maybe I'll share a few ideas, and then we can have a discussion if anyone has any questions or comments particular that are germane to our whole situation here. So, again, I'm really grateful for each and every one of you joining us. I've still been able to, there's an option for a waiting room still, so I was able to turn that off now, so people can just come on in without me having to let them in. I'm not sure how long that's going to last. I think maybe later this month that'll be disabled, but right now it's easy to come and go. Okay, so I'm sitting here again at the piano in our house here in Northern California, and I'd like to invite all of us to just take a few minutes and go within together. One of the foundational ideas, I think, really in mental health and in spiritual awakening is the idea of connecting with the inner silence that is always present beyond the internal dialogue that takes most of our attention up during the day. So let's do that now. Connect with our breathing. And give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to be together here this evening. And for the precious opportunity of a human birth. Entering into this present moment at peace here and now. This breathing . Watching the inhale and the exhale, giving thanks for every breath, connecting us the infinite ocean of life here. Giving thanks for the sun, the moon and the stars, the oceans and rivers, the mountains and forests, prairies, islands, all the animals celebrating their lives. May all beings be happy and at peace. May all beings be free. May we all realize the original brightness of our minds and hearts. Awaken to our true nature in every moment, abiding in the joy that is always bubbling like an eternal spring, the very core of our being. With every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of love, the feeling of benevolence and goodwill, that all beings be happy and at peace. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of love radiate from our heart, filling the whole world with the truth of infinite love. No being is excluded from the love that we have in our hearts for all expressions of life. Abiding in our true home, abiding in love, kindness. With every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion, the great yearning and wish that all beings be free from suffering and from the causes of suffering, and the yearning to act to help relieve the suffering of others, to be a force of caring, kindness and respect, healing, nurturing and supporting. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of compassion to radiate from our hearts into the world, filling the whole world with the truth of compassion. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings, everywhere. abiding in our true home, abiding in compassion. With every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy. This is the great joy that needs no reasons in the outer world, the joy of being, the great joy of spring blooming, the infinite web of life, ever blossoming, expanding, celebrating, the joy that we feel, and the joy of others. And so with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of joy to radiate from our heart, filling the whole world with the truth of joy. Abiding in joy, our true home. And now abiding in peace, with every exhalation, allowing this feeling of peace to radiate from our heart. In ever-expanding spheres of light, filling the whole world with peace and harmony. As we inhale, we feel this feeling of peace filling every cell of our being. Our entire being is filled with peace and harmony. And as we exhale, we radiate peace and harmony to all beings. And we see the whole earth now bathed in the light of peace and harmony, the truth, beyond the appearances. So abiding now in gratitude, abiding in love, compassion, joy, and peace. Enter the silence together. Take a few breaths and just abide in silence. In peace, in being, nothing that we have to attain or change in this moment. Abiding and watching, being aware what is arising moment after moment in consciousness. Okay, so let's... begin returning. Thank you again, everyone, for participating in our time of meditation here at the beginning. And that's really, I think, in many ways, the key to a lot of the difficulties that we're experiencing in this world today, is just a basic lack of understanding of the importance of the quality of consciousness that we're cultivating in our day-to-day life and practicing as best we can a mind that, as Gandhi said, is what we would like to see in the world. So I'd like to say share a few thoughts and then open it up to any questions or comments anybody may have. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us. And this is really great to be with you here. So the basic idea, I think, that I'd like to share today is the idea of inner silence. It's an idea that seems very abstract probably for most of us because we don't experience a lot of inner silence in our world. It's quite a challenge, actually. I remember when I first got on the spiritual path when I was in college back in the early 1970s, and I started meditating for the first time, and I had never done something like that, you know, just sit. It was like a Zen watching the breath thing up in the woods of Maine, and I think in 1973 or something. And I realized I just couldn't hardly do it. My mind was all over the place. And I thought it just seems so simple to just watch the breath and count from 1 to 10. I think I was doing that, but I could hardly count up to 10 before my mind was gone somewhere else. So over the years, I ended up just deciding this is a very important thing for me to do, and I dedicated lots of hours to this, to the practice of meditation. And I remember eventually it led me to a meditation center in Alabama where I was living with my brother back in, I think it was 1976, and we were the only ones kind of living there, sort of full-time during the day, and we would just meditate all day. I'd get up at 6 in the morning and meditate until 11, and then do yoga till noon, and then we'd meditate from 2 to 5, and just sitting on the floor, doing just sitting. That was all we did. Then meditate till 5, and then we'd have make some supper, and then I would meditate again from like 7 to 9 in the evening, and then we'd get up and do it again. We did that for months, just like, I don't know how I could have done it, actually. But we were so passionate about this whole thing. And then they told us, this was at a Zen meditation center, a Korean center, that it was going to be a Zen master coming from California, this old man. And so he showed up. His name was Master Gilbert. And he started giving actual teachings. And I was so hungry at that point because I'd been doing all this work on my own. I hadn't had a teacher. And I just thought, I need a teacher, somebody to help me to, you know, where I'm going wrong and so forth. And he talked about the mind being like a popcorn popping machine, that it's always popping up another popcorn, and you're trying to find the off switch and you can't find it. You know? It's just always got something else. And so and it's so true. I mean, we have this internal dialogue going on as human beings, and if we get quiet, we can watch it, but usually it's carrying us along. You know, it's just carrying us, and it's taking us. We don't know where it's taking us. It's basically the conditioning. Basically, it's conditioning. So our mind, as soon as we're born, we're like a little sponge, and we start soaking up everything from our environment, from our parents and our teachers and the people around us, and just what's going on. As we get older, we get more sophisticated in our acquisition conditioning. But basically, we accumulate enormous amounts of input, and a lot of it is unresolved inside of us. There's all kinds of inner conflicts, things we wish we would have done, things we wish we hadn't have done, things we wish they wouldn't have done, what we think we're going to do if we could, and if they don't do that, I want to do this, and how, you know. So our mind is basically working on things, and all of it revolves essentially around something that in some spiritual traditions is said to be an illusion, which is the self, this basic idea of me, you know, me as a fundamentally separate self, my name, my form, my history, my likes, my dislikes, all of that. So we have accumulated that. We're very proud of who we are, or maybe we really don't like who we are, but whatever it is, but we know who we are, we think. And that accumulation then, of course, is interacting with other accumulations, right? And the accumulations are all different. And so there's always going to be conflict because of the differences. You can have nine things the same and one thing different, and that one thing, we'll fight over that. So the path, I think, that we're talking about in the World Peace Diet in terms of deep veganism is the path of healing the world, not so much by going out and trying to change everybody and heal them, but really bringing our own life into alignment with deeper wisdom and living it from inside of ourselves, so that what we are becomes the change we want to see in the world, becomes the healing ourselves. It's easy to want to change other people, but it's very hard to change anyone else. And I think usually the more we try to change, the more they resist. So to change ourselves and bring ourselves into alignment, I think one of the most powerful tools we have is inner silence. Because in inner silence, we can get back to our consciousness before the programming, get little glimpses of that, or just a sense of it. And it takes effort, I have to say. It's an effort, although the problem is if we try too hard, then that seems to make the mind even more active. So it's this fine line between putting forth an effort, say to watch the breath, for example. There's many different practices. We can do a mantra. We can visualize peace or harmony in the world. We can hold different visualizations. We can just listen internally, be quiet and listen. There's many different practices, but all of them have the same foundation, which is to be present in this moment and aware, and not just following the thoughts wherever they go, not just, oh, what am I going to have for lunch? And when we do that, then to just basically bring the mind back. So in many ways, it's a practice of returning. And as we practice returning, we do get better at it, but it's very important not to look for progress in our meditation practice, because it's very hard to see. We may not think, you know, I've been practicing meditation now for 3 months or 10 years or whatever it is, and I don't see any progress, so I'm going to quit. So try not to do that. I think, you know, the most important thing is to just show up every day for whatever time you think you can afford. At this point, for many years I've been doing about either 2 hours a day or 1 hour a day sometimes. But I think, you know, to spend some time regularly to just be aware of our consciousness. Without trying to change, you know, it's like the opposite of our programming. In our programming, we're trying to change myself, change other people. Don't try to change anything, just be aware. So that's the idea. So the idea is that inner silence can help reconnect us to a wisdom that goes beyond the conditioning that the world has inflicted on us. And I think when that happens, we become much more skillful, basically, in our relationships with ourselves and with others, in the sense that we can see the conditioning in other people, and we see it in ourselves, and instead of attacking them or fighting with them, we can perhaps plant seeds that will help them to see another way of being, perhaps. But, you know, you never know. I mean, conditioning can be very, very, very dense and very thick. But the underlying idea is to realize that the self that I hold so strongly as being me, if we can kind of relax the grip on that, like instead of holding so tightly, relax that and realize that the self, it has sort of leaky membranes, you know, permeable boundaries, and that there is a center here of awareness, but I'm breathing, I'm interacting. The physical body is actually, there's more non-me, you know, cells than there are me cells, right? I mean, all the bacteria and viruses and everything. But beyond that, we're really, someone else exhales, I inhale. You know, their atoms and molecules and so forth become, you know, in me, in this body. But to go beyond that, to realize that we're eternal consciousness, we can get a glimpse of that, that what we are is not just this thing that was born and will die. And animal agriculture, from its foundation, is based on destroying that idea. It's based on reducing everything to matter. And when it does that, we create a religion, we create a science, we create economics and politics that basically dumb us all down very powerfully, because when you take away that element, when you take away the eternal consciousness element and reduce us to matter, to just conditioning, and have us competing with each other for limited resources, it really brings out the worst in people, unfortunately. We become consumers, we become addicted to our own points of view that we think is right, and fighting about all these things, and easily manipulated, easily fooled, really lost, actually, just completely lost in what's called, in the Buddhist tradition, samsara, which is basically ignorance, just not understanding our true nature, that what we actually are, that we're not a material thing. We're eternal consciousness with enormous wisdom, compassion, kindness, creativity, freedom, capacities, beyond what we can even begin to imagine, tremendous abilities that we all have. But when we are in our society constricted to being this thing, the self, this object that was born and will die, then fear comes in. Oh, I have to keep what I got, keep away what I don't want, fighting with others, competing. They're doing under the same illusion. We're all under that illusion as separate selves. Samsara it literally means suffering that never ends, because the idea is that we bring that to the next lifetime, and to the next lifetime, to the next lifetime, until we wake up. We're always, we may be a rich king, we may be a poor person in the gutter, but we're still suffering because we're still under this delusion. So the idea, in whatever lifetime we're in, use it. Don't waste this precious opportunity. Use it for the one thing that matters, which is spiritual awakening, and which is compassion also for others. They go together. They're completely interconnected. And, of course, animal agriculture is the epitome of the opposite of that. As soon as you get people eating animal foods, then they're shutting down their ability to make connections and natural intelligence or compassion. So moving to a vegan way of living is a foundation, but it's just the beginning. So I'm so glad you're here and interested in the adventure, really, that we're on as human beings right now to bring a higher way of living, or more harmonious way of living. And I think it's very important to get to these roots, these deep hidden roots. They're not only the roots of animal agriculture, which are hidden in our society. No one really talks about that. We all want peace. We all want harmony. We all want health. We want to keep eating animal foods. So vegans have sort of trying to share that idea. And Madeline and I have been traveling for 30 years trying to help people realize that that's not true. But even as vegans, if we don't go deeper to the deeper roots of the delusion that's still living in us of being a fundamentally separate self and all our conditioning that blinds us, really, it's like so. It's like looking through a fog. You know, I mean, veganism can take away some fog. It can, really can. It can kind of clarify some things. But the problem is we think, oh, now I'm a vegan. I'm done. I'm perfect. I can see clearly everything now. And it just, you know, it would be great if it was true. But we have what's called in Sanskrit vasanas. You know, vasanas are deep habit patterns in our mind, ways of seeing the world that it's like a paradigm, a certain pattern that we put on everything. And so to be able to quiet our mind and connect with inner silence, stop the internal dialogue, and then we're just looking, we're just listening, we're just aware. And something that would normally bother us, for example, someone says something critical or something, the natural tendency is we want to defend ourselves or fight back or do something. But if we, with practice, we can actually hear that and not actually fight back or defend ourselves, because there's another knowing that begins to arise that my happiness, my awareness, my inner peace is not dependent on what other people do and say, because who knows what they're going to do and say. They'll do all, and what's going to happen in the world? All kinds of things are going to happen. You don't know, you can't control another person what they're going to do. So if my happiness and inner peace is dependent on them, on the outer thing, there's no foundation. It's zero. So the whole idea is through meditation to realize, as we connect with this idea of inner silence and the self, that the self is, the separate self is an illusion, and the true being is at peace, even if the other person says something very shameful or antagonizing or whatever it is, because they've been wounded also. And whenever we're wounded, we do things. You know, we've all been wounded, and the more wounded we are, usually the more we wound other people. We can't help it. You know, so people who are really abused as kids tend to be very abusive when they get older, unless they deal with it. So that's the situation. The other thing I want to just add on to that, which maybe seems like it makes it a little bit complicated, but I think it's important to, because of what we're going through right now in the world, that this idea of good and evil, you know, like in the Buddhist tradition, something that I've always loved really is there's sort of this idea that good and evil are not that helpful. You know, it's better to use words like skillful and unskillful. So if people are doing like lying, stealing, cheating, abusing, you could say that's evil, right? You're just harming children or vulnerable people or animals, whatever it is, that's evil or bad. But you could also say it's unskillful, right? I mean, it's very unskillful because guaranteed you're not going to be happy doing that in the long run. And you're not helping other people. You're creating more misery and suffering and violence, and it will rebound, without a doubt. So it's extremely unskillful. When we're lost in the illusion of being a separate self, we become demonic. You know, the more separate self we become, the more firm, more ensconced in this idea of being a separate self, the more we naturally do things that look from the outside to be evil, demonic behavior. Like we can justify anything. We can justify stealing. I mean, I won't go into it, but we can do it. It's easy to do, actually. So, and we live in a capitalist system that kind of reinforces that in many ways, and all these systems in general. So skillful behavior is basically being kind and loving, caring, watching, you know, returning, you know, like Jesus said, many things what Jesus said, you know, not fighting back, in a sense. Because in the big picture, we understand that what we are is like the sky, right? Where we are ultimately undamageable. There are the clouds coming by. The sky doesn't get, oh, you darn cloud, get out of here. You're ruining me. I'm infinite, but you're getting in the way. The sky can hold all the clouds, and it's not worried about it, right? So we can have all these clouds coming and, you know, maybe throwing mud on us or whatever, but if we are aware that we're the ocean or we're the sky, can't ultimately harm us. But that is not something you can't get to that intellectually. I mean, it really means it takes practice. Practice every day, and through the practice, making connections. So naturally, when we begin to have glimpses, our behavior will look from the outside like it's good, you know, like we're, because what else? We see other people, other beings are not separate from us. They're wounded. We don't, but they're also beautiful. Beyond the wounds, there's the being. And there's a natural sense of kinship, natural sense of solidarity and connectedness, that harming them would be harming, really, harming myself would be like one finger whacking another, you know, when I'm trying to play the piano and saying, get out of the way here, you know. We realize that we're all serving, in a sense, a higher energy, or a higher source of life. We're all part of it, the same source. So, okay, so that I think is important, kind of an important thing that can be helpful in looking at good and evil. But then, it's also interesting to see, and I've been kind of contemplating how this all works right now, because there are also, like in the Buddhist tradition, in both Eastern and Western traditions, there are teachings that there is a sort of a force in the world that is harmful, right? In the Buddhist tradition, it's Mara, right? When Buddha was trying to attain enlightenment, he was attacked by the armies of Mara, the demons, and they were taunting him, and they were poking sticks into his ribs and trying to do anything they could to distract him and tempting him and saying, you know, you could, if you don't meditate anymore, you can become very rich, powerful emperor of India, and all kinds of things. And then we see the same thing in the Christian tradition, this idea that there are these sort of satanic or demonic or Luciferian forces that seem to have a reality in our world. And I think a lot of us, like right now, I mean, I've been seeing this for a long time. I think probably a lot of you have as well, that, you know, animal agriculture and the way we treat animals and what we do to ecosystems and really what we do to each other does have a very demonic aspect, in the sense that it's just so vicious and violent and so widespread and so relentless. But it was a little bit more, it was always seemed to me somewhat systemic. You know, it's just sort of, we started herding animals 10,000 years ago, and just one thing led to another, and a wealthy elite emerged, and the domination of women, the domination of animals, the creation of a capitalist system where a wealthy elite is basically creating the narrative, and sort of it's just developed its own thing, and now we have war and slavery and technology that dominates and pollutes and so forth. And here we are, we're born into that. So what do? We've got a few decades here on this earth while we're alive. Each one of us do the best we can to help heal that, transform that, awaken out of it, not be wounded by it, and help others free themselves from being wounded by it also. But with this, the latest sort of wrinkle in this whole thing with the with this COVID-19, you know, we see this, from my point of view, we see this sort of massive increase in the way that the violence is being spread. I mean, it's like, instead of basically human beings being this force together of violence towards animals and ecosystems, and you know, even though there's a lot of domination of humans as well, but now it seems like humans are really now being directly targeted and made into, you know, we're now the new livestock, and the systems are being set up very quickly that we will be branded and vaccinated and electroshocked and confined and used and killed, and just like we do cows and pigs and chickens. I mean, it's like microchipped livestock. And so it's obviously happening. I mean, you can say it's not happening. You could say it's just random. There's a disease happening, and it's just we're doing our best. So we're all wearing masks to try to get rid of it. I mean, you can think that if you want, but from my point of view, you know, we need to see that this is too well coordinated. There's some kind of like something that's driving this in a very systematic way. This kind of harm to our rights and freedoms and abilities, and a taking away really of our abilities to do things that really are healthy for us, to have to freely express ourselves, to gather, to hug, to be human, with all the beautiful things that, you know, creative, and have concerts and lectures and religious services. We're kind of confined to these virtual events. We become virtual people. We went shopping today, and it's the same thing. Everybody's wearing a mask except us in the store, and we smile at everybody, and I don't know if they're smiling or not back. But they're nice. I mean, we're in a rural area. Everybody kind of lets us get away with it, I guess. But I can just, there's this sense of working as skillfully as we can with the situation that we have, and each one of us finding our way to do that, finding our own unique way to work with that. And I know we're all living in different situations, and seeing that being, acting in a skillful way in a situation and being loving may look different ways depending on the situation. But each one of us, through our meditation practice, through our own inner wisdom, is called to decide how to act in any situation, and hopefully to be a force for healing and inspiration to others. And in some ways, I think to expose underlying negativity, which has been here since we were all born, right? I mean, we're born into a system of domination, exploitation of animals and ecosystems, and now it seems to be ramping up to a stronger level. Hopefully, right, to be healed if we respond correctly, or to be in some way, because I think the underlying idea we all had was we can't just keep going the way we were going. Madeline and I were traveling, for decades, kind of trying to shake everybody and say, look, the way we're living with this massive violence towards rainforests and oceans and animals and really each other and hungry people, it's not sustainable. The social injustice and the environmental injustice and the inner loss of peace on Earth, we need to have a whole new foundation. So basically, this is it. We need a whole new foundation. It's more clear than ever that animal agriculture is driving this thing. And I think the greatest gift we can give in this time is the gift of inner silence, of connecting with that eternal dimension that we are, beyond the struggle of survival, which, and the fear that we have maybe of what's going to happen if they keep rolling this thing forward, and remembering at a deeper level the truth that we are an eternal being and essentially undamageable, and therefore we have nothing to really be afraid about. And that sense of getting beyond the kind of fear that makes us just not want to speak up or be different, we need, I think, to each one of us work with that too. So the greatest ally I think we have is our inner wisdom, our inner intuition that speaks to us when our rational conditioned mind gets quiet. The rational mind is great and, it's really important, but I think there's an inner whispering wisdom that's available to all of us in a pretty unique way, I think, for most of us. I mean, for all of us. We have our unique way of accessing this. And so see if you can find whatever you can do that you think helps connect with your intuition. Personally, I think inner silence is really important. Connecting with nature, I think, really helps. Being creative, maybe drumming or dancing or moving or whatever. If you find certain things, maybe writing, just in a journal can be very helpful. But find ways to connect with your intuition and this inner wisdom, because we really need that. I think what this is right now is not just a cultural challenge or a psychological challenge. It's really a spiritual challenge, in a way, it's a spiritual battle. And between the forces of ignorance, which are still within us, and the forces of awakening and healing, and to bring love to every dimension of ourselves, to the wounded parts of ourselves, through practicing inner silence and being in this moment as much as we can. So I want to thank again all of you for the efforts you're making in all this. I think we have a few minutes. If anyone has a question or comment you'd like to share with everybody, just go ahead and raise your hand. You can press star 6 if you're on a telephone, or you can I think you can just unmute yourself or something, raise your hand. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but just make a sign or whatever. But if anyone has something you'd like to add to the conversation or something you'd like to have feedback about, because you know, this is, from me, from my point of view, this is our opportunity. A lot of you are in the World Peace Diet Circle, and we have a third Thursday at the same time, which is more on really the what's happening in the world of veganism. And I like this idea of having a satsang, a community of truth, a community of, it actually means community of goodness or truth, where as a community we can reflect on what's happening out there, but also in here, which can be very painful, really, right now. It can be so painful to see relationships just unraveling. And people, it's almost like we're in a semi-sane world, and all of a sudden it seems like we're in an insane asylum, and we don't want to become insane ourselves, because that's what tends to happen, you know. There's an old saying in the Buddhist tradition of right association. You know, we become like the people we hang out with. So it's very important for us to be conscious of who we're associating with, and associate and be one you'd like others to associate with, and also find those who have a similar wavelength. I think that's what we're doing here, and it's very helpful, I think, to all of us during this time. So let's see. It looks like there's somebody unmuted, maybe. Go right ahead. 707-986-90. Oh, that's Madeline, I think.
Actually. No,
this is Lily. Oh, it's Lily. Okay, great. Hi, Lily. Familiar number. Yeah.
It's so good to be on this call. You can't even imagine, because my body is exhausted from a lot of grief and caregiving, full-time caregiving of my beloved spouse, I'm 73 and he's 95, and I've known him almost 60 years since I was a very young girl, and I loved him all my life. And doing that and losing my sister last week, my beloved sister, really, and my dog. I mean, I'm going through such losses that without a spiritual life, I think my heart would be so broken. And my beautiful cat. I mean, I've lost so much in the last few months that one of my friends who was a therapist said, "You're off the chart, Lily. You're off the chart." And she's one of my best friends. But what I haven't lost is my deep connection to what I found through the World Peace Diet. And your meditation put me back into that connection. And my way of eating now for almost 14 years because of the World Peace Diet, I believe, is allowing me to have a clear, I mean, otherwise I'd be lying in a ball and never getting out of bed. That's how I feel. That's how I felt this morning. I thought, I wish I could be in a facility right now where people were just taking care of me. But I live way off the grid. I live in the mountains, and there were definite threats of fire. I mean, I've been through so much over the last few months, because it started with my dog on the solstice, my dog who I wasn't expecting to die, my Jimmy boy, my beautiful vegan dog. My animals are all vegan now for almost 14 years also, and he was almost 15. Beautiful dog, and all this loss without a spiritual practice. And I have to say, I'm not like Will and Madeline. But I stop. I take breaks, and I sit down, and I center myself, and I say, here I am. I'm a vegan. I have good friendships. I get to live in a beautiful place, although it's difficult living here. And I just go for the gratitude.
Beautiful.
And I have a lot of friends who love me and care about me and who are coming forward to try to help me in my difficult situation. And I am so moved, because I feel like I haven't done anything to deserve it. I've just been me. I haven't been a super activist, but I did do some activism, and I did it today when I was talking to the Neptune Society. I'm like a missile directed at this change. And when I talked to her, she was asking me questions about my baby. She was much younger than I, 9 years, my baby sister. And I was, through my tears, I still told her the best thing I ever did in my life was to go vegan. And I said, you're much younger than I. Look to it. Just look to it. And she was so nice. She gave me her home number and said, call me anytime. You know,
wow.
That's the kind of connections. God has given me a way to make those connections with people. Mm-hmm. Through no fault of my own, people like me. And I'm so grateful. And I'm so grateful that I decided no matter what I had to do next, stopping. I knew you were having this, and I knew it would be beautiful, and it's been exquisite. And what it's done is give me spiritual energy so I can go now and care for my husband and what I need to do in life. And I have energy. I didn't have any before I sat down and meditated with you. I didn't. I was like, I'm washed up. But we always have more than we think we have. So, thank you, Will. Thank you, Madeline. Thank you for doing what you did for me. I am so grateful. I'm very teary-eyed. And one thing you said, most of the people in my life are very kind and gentle with me. But I have one person who is, you know, she tends to have a personality that's judgmental. And whenever I listen to her now, I go, oh, you dear heart. Oh, you need to be that way. Oh, you sweet girl. I don't say it to her. I'm thinking that.
Right.
I'm thinking that, oh, you darling. Oh, you darling. I love you so much. And I found through all the pain that I'm going through right now, love, you know, the Beatles said, love is all we need. Well, love is all there is. And when you have it and it's in your heart, you have everything and you can go through anything. And if you don't have it, you have nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get off the phone with that, Will, but
that's
I wanted to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to speak. Thank you. I love you.
All right. Thanks.
And Madeline and all of everyone on the line who is aspiring to live a vegan lifestyle. Thank you.
Thank you, Lily. That was amazingly touching. Beautiful. Wow. Thank you. So I won't add anything. That's just very very beautiful. And you know, Lily's been a real champion of the World Peace Diet, and I've known over the years. Anybody gets on the phone with her, she has to pay a bill to the phone company, or whatever. She's telling them they better go vegan and read the World Peace Diet. She's out there in the middle of the forest without even an internet connection, just a telephone, but she's doing her activism. And life can really, what she's sharing about the loss, to find even within that a sense of love and gratitude. So that's very inspiring. Anyone else would like to share something? We've got maybe a couple more minutes before we reach the top of the hour. Usually I think keep this to about an hour. But anyone else like to ask a question or just share a thought or feeling about anything before we wrap it up? Otherwise, I can play a little music and we can call it an evening. It's just beautiful to, you know, share the space, even though we're not together physically, that we have beyond the physical level, consciousness is infinite and we touch each other telepathically, and we're connected on that level. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, the spiritual healing traditions of the world always acknowledge that you don't need to be necessarily physically right in the same room with someone. Spiritual healing can happen on the other side of the planet, and energy and intention and consciousness are not limited by time and space and matter. So that's the beautiful thing. Our hearts are connected. And I'm really glad that Lily emphasized the importance of vegan living, because that really, I think, can never be overstated. It's essential. as a foundation for everything. And then, of course, I always like to say we need to get beyond the materialism of animal agriculture. A lot of people are vegan and they still are afraid or resistant to spirituality. And veganism is spirituality. Spirituality is simply respecting beings as beings, beyond, you know, seeing them beyond being objects, and questioning the reductionist narrative in our society that is so toxic. We really created a whole science that is like a religion of reductionism in many ways, that it's time for us to deepen our understanding of how we relate to the world and to each other.
Hey, Will.
Susan, I see somebody waving. Yes, Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, it's you're reminding me now how I've been struggling with things, because everybody on TV, which you don't have, they talk, and the politicians are all talking about science, science, science. We have to follow the science. And of course, I know from the World Peace Diet that it's not all about science, but it's just hard to combat all that science reliance on science. And even my friends in the vegan movement in my neighborhood are science, science, science. So.
Thank you, Susan. You know, that's really true, and that's a whole long discussion. I actually, back years ago, I taught college courses for several years in epistemology and the philosophy of science. And I'd love to just have all your friends and all of us, you know, go through one of these courses, you know, like for a whole semester, reading and studying and discussing what is science actually, where did it come from, and what are the underlying assumptions of science, and because it's being used as a hammer to just smash everybody, because it's easily controlled and manipulated by corporate and governmental and banking interests, and you can't, and if you sort of question it, you're like, it's like questioning the high priests. You know, you're going to be excommunicated, and you're thought of as being some kind of, that you just don't know what you're talking about. You know,
Okay. Well, thanks.
Yeah, so I think I'll go ahead. So I just think it's very good to do some serious exploration of science. I think in whatever way, you know, I'm reading a book right now because I interviewed this couple. They wrote the book. It's called Why Are You Really Ill? It's a question. Why are you really ill? And written by a couple from England. It's 800 pages, and it's the whole thing is basically questioning the medical, pharmaceutical, scientific paradigm of health and drugs, and kind of like the emperor has no clothes, you know, sort of showing that we're operating with a system that really is harming a lot of people more than we realize. And they talked about how George Washington, when he was 67 years old, you know, that's my age, he had some kind of an ailment, and at that point, you know, the accepted way of treating people was, the idea was that the blood had these different humors in it, and in order to heal someone, you have to bleed them. They'd take blood out of the person to get rid of the bad humor that was in them, and so they took half of the blood out of his body, and just killed him. That was it. He was dead. And, you know, and we think we've come so far since then. But then, you know, the underlying idea is that really it's so important for each one of us to open our minds and hearts to, obviously there's good things that can be offered through science and technology, however those manifest in our world. But right now we're also dealing with science and technology that can be used to imprison, like animals. You know, animals are imprisoned by science and technology to an enormous degree. So it's good to understand that and have kind of a lightness about it. You know, it's people criti- you know, people I think I'm criticized. It's sort of behind my back. Nobody dares to do it to me directly, but I think behind my back somehow on social media or whatever, people say, "Oh, Will Tuttle, he's anti-science or something." I mean, oh my gosh, you know, they, you know, people don't understand what science is, right? I mean, how it's evolved and how it really it's become scientism. It's become sort of a belief system that's faith-based. You got to believe in it, and the farther you go, the more you get the blinders slapped on. I went through it. I got a PhD. I took, you know, courses in the qualitative and quantitative research methodologies, and I learned exactly how you do research and, you know, and how the assumptions are addressed. And, I mean, it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz. You pull a curtain back, and you see that it's just a little guy back there pretending, you know. And they, and it's
Will,
control,
I have to interrupt you. My sister was killed by the medical profession. They started her on psychotropic drugs at the age of 14.
Right.
And it destroyed her kidneys, and she died because of what they did to her. And it's hard for me to say that because my husband is a physician, but she was killed. And I talked to a close friend of mine, Joanne, as you know, and she said, "You're right, Lily. You're absolutely right." I said, "My sister was killed by the medical profession, and she died of COVID. But she got COVID because she was so sick, you know."
Right. Thanks, Lily. Yeah, I know. You're right. I mean, these are not just abstract ideas. They have huge consequences in people's lives. I mean, huge. The destruction and devastation of people. I mean, if they roll out this vaccine like they're talking about, that could be enormous. I mean, it already is enormous suffering. So we have to really keep our wits about us with this whole thing. That's true. And thank you, Lily, for emphasizing that point. All right, everyone.
Do you have a second? One more thing?
Okay, one more little thing. Okay, who's this? Andy?
Hi, it's Andy.
Okay,
Hi. Yes. There's other things I want to say, but I just wanted to bring up today, I saw in two things, because I heard her mention the psychotropic drugs, and I've seen documentaries on that. Well, today I saw Dr. Pam Popper, heard her, and Del Bigtree, and they each were quoting, I guess, this person that's trying to encourage, and you might have seen this already, that they like drug the water so that they can get people to comply with vaccinations. I don't know if you heard that one yet.
I haven't heard of that, but I think it's already happening in the sense that fluoride, you know, is pretty effective in sort of creating complacency in people and clogs up the pineal gland, which is our connection with spirituality. So the mass fluoridation of people, fluoride is really toxic and attacks your nervous system. And so I think it's probably already happening, but you're saying that there's even something more specific that is
about? Because the intention is because for those who do not want to comply with either wearing masks or getting vaccinations, they're considering like a psychotropic drug to drug the water to get people to be obedient. Yeah, each of them, yeah, this is crazy. Dr. Pam Popper had it on her video today, wow. And then on Del Bigtree's thing, I heard him, someone quoted it, I don't know who it was, but Del Bigtree said, I think this is a person who's teaching in the schools who was recommending this, and just really crazy.
Thanks so much, Andy. All right. Yeah, we should kind of wrap it up here, but I really appreciate you sharing that. And yeah, I know. It's also, we're all nice and safe. They're all trying to keep us safe. So, well, on that note, let's maybe before we go into the world again, just come back. I'll maybe just have a short brief meditation. And realizing that this world that we're in has challenges, and as we understand, there are many forces that are forces of delusion, but each one of us can be a force of wisdom and awareness, bright, clear-eyed awareness, seeing what's happening and not being afraid and being loving with each other and shining forth the spirit of loving kindness and awareness into our world, knowing that what we are is eternal and undamageable, that we are ultimately unstoppable in our quest for awakening and for becoming bodhisattvas. A bodhisattva is someone who's just dedicated their life to blessing the world and to awakening for the benefit of all living beings. So we can close perhaps with just a short piece of music and remember the truth that the only ultimate power is the power of love. Thank you everyone again for joining us for our World Peace Satsang, and may you have a beautiful month of learning and growing, finding opportunities to share and to serve and to awaken and to help bring the vegan message of compassion into our world and to live more deeply, to connect with the inner silence, the inner wisdom that's always shining in our hearts. And we can say together our prayer circle for animals, official prayer that we say every day at noon. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Again, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And one last time, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Much love to you all. Go forth and multiply the message. Madeline and I send our love, and I will. And for those of you in the circle, on our third Thursday call, we'll have as normal. And I do have a recording of this. I'll send it out, a link to it, if you want to listen to it later or share it with people. All right. Much love to you. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.